The next case is 07-1546 in the matter of the guardianship of Alice I. Richardson. Mr. Breidenbach.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'm John Breidenbach. I represent the appellant, Alice Ledford, who is the applicant for appointment as guardian in this case.
Mr. Breidenbach,
yes, sir.
Reading pages 15 and 16 of your brief, shouldn't we conclude that this case should be dismissed as it having been improvidently allowed? Because you tell us that even if we rule in your favor, it's going to be advisory only because we took only proposition of law number 2, which means that the ward's appeal, successful appeal to the second district, and the outcome of that would still stand.
Well, in the alignment that the propositions have been briefed, and that this court has suggested should be briefed, proposition of law number 2, that is correct. If the court literally only accepted and reviewed and passed on number 2, I think that's exactly what would happen. There are two appellants here. Obviously, the Mrs. Leach's appellant were questioning her standing before the lower court. Mrs. Richardson, the ward, doesn't have or present a standing issue. She presents a waiver issue related to Rule 53. I believe this
but
court...
But that's not here.
That's correct. I think this court has in its inherent power to address the third proposition of law, this very thing has already happened recently in March, where a preliminary issue was deemed necessary by this court to be reached before the primary issue that the court wanted to review. And that happened in the Taylor Building case versus Benfield, decided March 26th of this year, where the court refused initially to review a proposition of law that was ultimately deemed to be preliminarily necessary in order to reach the root issue. We've certainly acknowledged the paradox that appellants are faced with here. We have a proposition of law number 2 that will only get us halfway there to a restoration of the guardianship.
But on the legal issue, we don't need to decide the other proposition of law, do we? The question of whether giving notice, the statute provides notice to a next of kin who lives in the state, and that's a legal issue, whether that gives that next of kin standing if the next of kin doesn't file for guardianship. Isn't that the legal issue before us on this proposition of law?
Well, again, if I understand your question, Your Honor, determination of that legal issue, that standing issue of the only pertains to the appellant or the appellee Leach. It does not pertain to the appellee Richardson. So,
but Mr. Breidenbach, I think the Chief's point is that we're not just trying to decide your case. There is a decision of an appellate court that says giving notice to an individual pursuant to statute is the equivalent of recognizing party status for that individual, and that's a holding of an appellate court. And isn't that the legal issue that we should resolve as to whether or not giving notice to a party pursuant to a statute creates party status?
And that is proposition of law number 2, and, of course, that is the basis for the Second District's decision. It's just that...
Well, I think that's what the point is, that one of the reasons we may not accept your suggestion to improvidently allow that appeal is not because we wouldn't get a resolution favorable to your client or adverse to your client, but it will give us the opportunity to address a significant legal issue and determine whether or not that was an appropriate conclusion or an inappropriate conclusion.
Well, that may be so, Your Honor, but We're asking this court to reverse and to restore.
What you're saying is our resolution of that issue may not decide this case favorably to your client.
It will not unless unless this court also addresses Mrs. Richardson's. Okay. Unfortunately, from our standpoint, Mrs. Richardson's running a separate, she's a separate appellant in the lower court in the second district. If this court chooses to rule favorably to the appellant in this court on the standing issue, the Leach appeal, if you will, you'll still be left with the Richardson.
But we aren't left with that. What we have is a proposition of law before us that parties you've asked us to decide, and the other issue is not before us. Now, the question I guess we have here to decide is whether it's important enough legal issue for the bench and the bar to know whether a next of kin who receives notice of a guardianship who does not file to be the guardian, whether that notice to the next of kin gives the next of kin the status of a party in someone else's appeal or right to appeal. That's the issue, and doesn't that stand alone? I mean, whether it resolves the case or not, it's very tempting to do what Justice Pfeiffer suggested. In fact, I read this and I thought, well, we're not going to comment on a proposition of law that we didn't accept, and it's very easy for us just to dismiss it because it probably may not dispose of the ultimate question. But we have this legal issue before us that we have to decide, in our judgment, whether this is worth are making a statement on it.
Well, of course, that's a conundrum that didn't pass me over in terms right. of the court's alignment
and
ruling to even hear this case. On the other hand, it's always been the task of this court to reach rulings that have an ultimate effect on the outcome of the case. And I've cited case law from this court on that point in our briefs. Even if this court reaches a decision on the issue of standing on the Leach appeal, I'll make my point one last time. We still have Mrs. Richardson out here who does not have a standing issue. She does not present a standing issue. She presents a waiver issue, which if the court wishes to reach some determination of the next of kin's rights vis-a-vis notice in a guardianship proceeding, you must first, I think, address the Richardson aspect of this case, the waiver aspect, as a preliminary issue to get to that issue. Otherwise, you'll be left rendering an advisory decision without any practical effect on the outcome of this case.
Is it your opinion that the waiver issue has been adequately briefed in this case?
It certainly wasn't briefed on the merit briefs. It was certainly discussed and explored by the parties in the memoranda in support of jurisdiction. I think the record is pretty clear, as clear as it was in the Taylor versus Benfield case as to what the issues were. And in this case, the waiver issue is clear cut on the record. And the fact of the matter is that neither Mrs. Richardson, who was the ward, nor her guardian ad litem objected to the magistrate's amended decision. Advanced the argument in the Court of Appeals, in the Montgomery County Court of Appeals, that the Montgomery County Probate Court lacked jurisdiction of the case based on residency or legal settlement, that issue, which, of course, was our first suggested or requested proposition of law.
And you think you can waive jurisdiction?
I beg your pardon?
And you think you can waive that?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
if you're contending that the court never had jurisdiction.
Well, you talk about jurisdiction in two aspects. And, by the way, this court's decision in the JJ case has an interesting, one of the more recent dissertations on different kinds of jurisdiction. It's not subject matter jurisdiction. It's whether The Montgomery County Court of Appeals had jurisdiction of this case. That's the issue. And it's a concern between void and voidable jurisdictional issues. It's our position that the waiver by Mrs. Richardson on that point is a voidable argument for lack of jurisdiction, and that's a little bit different. You got to raise it.
Counsel, before we go off in that direction, and again, I don't think we're here necessarily to discuss Mrs. Richardson's appeal.
Yes.
I'm troubled by one discrepancy that I noticed. The appellate court, Judge Grady, says that this is a guardianship for the person and the estate of the incompetent in the first line. And my understanding was just the person.
Yes, ma'am. This was an application for guardianship of the person only.
The probate court only allowed for guardianship of the person, not her estate.
Exactly, and that's reflected in the letters of the order and as well the letters of guardianship. That was just a typo error, which the suggestion by Judge Grady that it was a guardianship of the person and estate. It was just of the person.
Well, does that make any difference, do you think? Whether it would have been, is that important to their analysis in the appellate court?
I don't think that it matters, and I never gave it any second thought, nor did my worthy opponents make any distinction about that. We all treated it and wrote about it, at least in the context of it being only an application for guardianship of the person.
So it's just a mistake by the appellate court here, and we don't have to think about it.
That would be our position, yes. The standing issue has been a most troublesome one, especially in the Second District. You know, I feel like our client got blindsided based on the Dorothy Lee decision in the Second District, which held that next of kin don't have any particular status, certainly don't acquire status as a party by the fact that they are entitled to notice or that they're next of kin. That was a clearly stated position in the Dorothy Lee case, one that, of course, our client relied on in its evaluation of the case.
Your view on the merits would be that the brother would have had standing to appeal, but
in Dorothy Lee, I believe it's a nephew. I'm sorry, the brother in the Richardson case.
In the Richardson case, because he had requested,
absolutely,
had a dueling request.
Jimmy Richardson had filed an application.
Right.
Virtually.
So clearly, he has a right to appeal.
Yes, Your Honor, he does. By the Dorothy Lee standard and by every other case that I can think of that I've read, appellate case about that issue. There are actually, in this case, there were four potential appellants. Certainly Jimmy Richardson was one. Certainly the ward, Mrs. Richardson, was one. As well, her guardian ad litem. And then our client, Alice Ledford, the applicant. There were four potential appellants, and that was the lesson of Dorothy Lee. The second appellate district, I think I said in my brief, responded to our brief, sub silentio, overruling Dorothy Lee, simply ignored it and went the other way, indicating that next of kin have standing, therefore they honored Mrs. Leach's appeal. I see my time's up. Thank you.
Mr. Beinbach, let me ask you one question before you sit down, and you'll get a little time for rebuttal. The statute 211104, as you know, which provides for the notice in these cases, is fairly descriptive in the requirements for the notice that's given to the suggested ward. Section 2, small b, just says it's almost a throwaway. It's almost an afterthought, referring to notice upon whom notice is served. upon the next of kin of the person for whom appointment is sought who are known to reside in the state. What is your strongest argument that, put aside these other court of appeals opinions, we're not bound by them, obviously, they're persuasive, but I'm not persuaded by any of them, frankly. What is your, I want to hear your strongest argument as to why the statute gives status to, gives party status the right to an appeal, a decision, when that next of kin who received notice did not file to be the guardian himself or herself. What's your strongest policy argument? Why does the statute require that result?
Well, there is a statutory purpose, certainly in giving notice to next of kin. That statutorily stated purpose has to do with moving property or changing property, you know, during the pendency of an application for guardianship. There's case law, of course, that says that the purpose of notice is to allow, you know, family members, next of kin, to be aware of the proceeding and to participate as to come. It's a discretionary thing. You know, in the overall big picture of Chapter 2111, the overriding theme is the best interests of the ward. And this task that the probate court has is determining, well, in this case, competency and whether the applicant is a suitable person to be guardian. Allowing next of kin to have party status in the probate court merely opens the door for collateral issues, sibling rivalry, money, and in this particular case, in the merit brief of the appellees is included a decision from a West Virginia court indicating that indeed Mrs. Richardson, when she was spirited from Ohio during the pendency of this guardianship application, within days of her arrival in West Virginia, canceled her POAs and vitiated her inter vivos trust and things like that. So I think the overriding purpose of 2111 is to focus, you know, on the best interests of the ward and that process I just described, and attempting to exclude all these collateral issues that seem always to plague contested guardianships. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Dunphy.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. The case, particular case we have before us, the main issue, the only issue in terms of the three propositions of law before you, is whether or not it is necessary for a next of kin in order to be considered a party within the meaning of Appellate Rule 3 and 4, whether that person also has to file a competing application for guardianship. And in this particular case, the appellee, who is the subject of this proposition of law, did not file a competing application.
What is the status of the West Virginia case right now? What was filed and what is the current status?
The current status is that, just coincidentally, as of yesterday, the Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia denied Mr. Ledford's petition for to hear the case, in essence.
The Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals?
It was, Your Honor, I think it's the intermediate court.
Intermediate court.
I confess ignorance, really, about mm-hmm. the West Virginia system beyond that.
But under the West Virginia application, Richardson is the current guardian, correct?
There is no guardian.
No guardian.
Under the West Virginia case, Your Honor. And
she moved back to West Virginia, got rid of the guardian, essentially, and is living on her own.
She's living on her own with James, one of her other children, living with her and helping her. And
so there's really no competing guardianship in West Virginia for us to worry about.
There is no competing guardianship in West Virginia.
Is there guardianship pending
in West Virginia?
No, Your Honor, there's not. There was that issue, the issue of Mrs. Richardson's competency was litigated.
And it's still decided that she's competent according to the West Virginia probate court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or the equivalent of probate court there.
And okay. Now appeal of that has apparently been denied.
And so, again, getting back to this, whether we should improvidently allow this or not, if we decide the legal issue in this case, it has no effect on the guardianship issues because the other appeal was not accepted.
I think that's one of the reasons why it has no effect. I think it also has no effect for the very reason that Mr. Breidenbach discussed in his brief, and that was there's been some discussion here this morning, and that is that this court has accepted only proposition of law number two, which relates only to the issue of Mrs. Leach standing to appear to appeal. It does not that proposition does not deal with Mrs. Richardson and her success in the Court of Appeals and its determination that the trial court lacked subject matter jurisdiction, and therefore this court's addressing the issue of whether a next of kin has standing to appeal could not in any manner affect what the Court of Appeals has done with regard to Mrs. Richardson.
Mr. Dunphy, do you agree that this panel seemed to ignore the previous case of Lee, which should have controlled the outcome here?
No, I don't. In fact, I submit, Your Honor, that the Court of Appeals decision in Richardson is entirely consistent with its own decision in Lee. What was indeed, if one made a cursory reading of the Lee case, one might conclude that the status of the next of kin's having filed an application or not was paramount. However, it's clear from a close reading of that case that what was important was not so much that the nephew had not filed a competing application, but rather that he agreed that the ward was incompetent, and he agreed that the trial court, the probate court, had jurisdiction to hear the case. That's entirely contrary to the to what occurred in this case and what the Court of Appeals determined. The Court of Appeals in this case, Mrs. Leach argued that Mrs. Richardson was not incompetent, and along with Mrs. Richardson argued that the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction at the time of the application. And
counsel, before you proceed, like a little basic. When Leach got notice as next of kin, she obviously came into the probate court and contested. Was she contesting as a party or simply as a witness? Was there an application to intervene, or how would one become a party in the probate court proceeding?
Your Honor, she did not make application to intervene. She appeared as a witness. Subsequent to the hearing, she made objections to the magistrate's recommendations, and then subsequent to that filed her notice of appeal. She did not achieve a formal status of a party, but she was a person who was entitled to notice under the statute, and therefore under the statute was a person who was affected by the hearing or by the decision on
counsel,
the hearing.
Counsel, what's the purpose of the notice in your thoughts?
The purpose is to allow a person such as Mrs. Leach to be heard and to protect her due process rights,
as the cases have said. The way to do that, and I'm not sure that there's due process rights involved here, but isn't the way to do it to give an in-state next of kin the ability to then file an application themselves to become guardian and thereby acquire status?
Certainly, that would be a means by which someone such as Mrs. Leach could be an actual party to the proceeding. However, in this case, that would make no sense, because in this case, Mrs. Leach didn't think her mother was incompetent, and Mrs. Leach also didn't think that the court had jurisdiction over her mother. And therefore, it would be incongruous for her to file an application to be appointed guardian herself because of those facts. She felt it was unnecessary and that the court lacked jurisdiction. So, however, the statute clearly provides for the notice being provided to her and clearly provides that if notice is not provided, then any guardianship proceeding is subject to termination. That seems to have behind it some important policy considerations as to why such a person should receive notification.
Is that an automatic voiding of the guardianship if a next of kin in state had not received notice?
It is a grounds, I think, for termination, Your Honor, is generally as I understand how the statute works. And I think as a matter of practice, I think the probate courts will not issue an order without the provision of the notice. And in this particular case, of course, the notice was given. Mrs. Leach appeared. Mrs. Leach testified. And subsequent to that, expressed her disagreements with the magistrate's determination. And really, the appellant relies upon two cases, one other case in Lee, the Santrusa case, which I believe is also pending before the court, to support this position that in order to appeal, that must be a competing application filed by the next of kin. And as I set forth in my brief, really both of those cases are distinguishable. The least distinguishable for the reason I previously said. Santrusic is distinguishable because in Santrusic, Mrs. Hall was not a resident who was required to be provided notice. Therefore, Santrusic really is inapplicable.
I have another question about the statute. 211104A2B is the notice statute and says, upon next of kin of the person for whom appointment is sought who are known to reside in the state. And then you go down to Section D, which states, from the service of notice, and presumably that's on the next of kin, until the hearing, no sale, gift, conveyance, or encumbrance of the property of an alleged incompetent shall be valid as to persons having notice of the proceedings. What's your thoughts between the relationship of the requirement for notice and then the prohibition upon people who have been served with this notice?
Well, perhaps that is one of the reasons for the notice requirement. However, there's certainly nothing in the statute indicative that that's the only reason for the statute. And indeed, the cases, particularly the Second District Court of Appeals, again, in the Garrity case, speak in terms of the statute providing the statute setting forth that a next of kin is affected by the decision. Therefore, in Garrity, there wasn't any real consideration of what you just pointed out, Your Honor. The focus was on how the next of kin was affected, and so therefore, I submit that although that may be part of the statutory scheme, it certainly isn't the only part of the statutory scheme, and that certainly there's an intent to allow a next of kin to have a means by which they can contest what is taking place to their, in this case, mother. And I think some of that reasoning really sort of goes unspoken, that I think it's not hard to understand that the legislatures would want people who have a blood relationship with a proposed ward, that they would have some input in what was taking place to their relative, in this case their mother.
That's
although that's not
set.
Let me finish your sentence.
I'm sorry. Although that's not set forth, I don't think it takes much imagination to think that that's partly what's behind the legislature's placement of this in the statute.
Well, that's essentially what Mr. Breidenbach said in answer to my question. Is that giving notice and next of kin is to get everybody into the court's best interest of the ward is the concern of the judge, and that if everyone's there, the judge can hear obviously all of the anecdotes and the reasons that he or she should not appoint a ward or a guardian. But there's a leap then from there, isn't it, to make all of those persons from 04 to B to make them parties. What makes them a party? The fact that they're all there in court, they all have an opportunity to say their piece about their mother or their father in a situation like this. But what makes them a party in the statute?
I think because they're affected by the decision to appoint a guardian for their relative, and it's of interest to them as to A, whether or not the person is incompetent and perhaps B, who is appointed as the guardian.
So they're not directly affected, but as the proposed ward is, but they're indirectly affected, you're saying.
Well, there's a aspect in the case. There seems to be some aspect in the cases about there being some pecuniary interest, but there also is discussion in the case about personal rights in the cases, and I submit that perhaps that's what is meant by these cases, that if you don't have, if a child doesn't have an interest in the welfare of their mother, there's not much else in society that seems to be more important to most of us, and the case, the few, and it's interesting, there has been very little apparent case law on this, and I suspect it's because these things go on. People are notified. The probate court notifies the people. Just as you say, Your Honor, people come in and have their word. And in most cases, that's satisfactory. But, however, I think there's times when that isn't enough, where there's been some failure, or at least perceived failure, at the trial court level that needs to be redressed. And in this particular case, it was very important, because in this particular case, the court didn't even have jurisdiction to appoint the guardian. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunphy. Mr. Breidenbach, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. Yes, may it please the court. There's a seminal case that this court worked through in the Santrusic appeal and the oral argument. This is In Re Love, you know. And In Re Love is, as far as I can determine, a seminal case of this court about the reasons that we allow people to have party status for appeal purposes. And in the context of guardianship proceedings, In Re Love is instructive because it describes the requirement for some personal right, some personal right that must be prejudiced, an immediate and pecuniary interest by a person claiming authority to appeal. And, you know, In Re Love involved a termination of 2111.47 proceeding. There's case law that indicate that the dynamics are the same whether you're on an application or a termination. The point of it is that the array of potential appellants or parties is very limited, and limited for the reasons I commented on before. The whole scheme of 2111 is to limit controversy and therefore parties to determining what is in the best interest of the guardian, the ward, excuse me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Breidenbach. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.